Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and we want this beer right now.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading A Tale for the Time Being by Ruth Ozeki, and I'm starting with a beer. So this book, they deal with finding stuff that's washed up from Japan's big tsunami in 2011. And what else got fucked up with that tsunami, Nate? Do you remember?
Yeah, what else? Fukushima.
Fukushima, right? Which was a nuclear reactor. And I don't know exactly how much it generated, but it definitely generated at least 50 watts. And this is 50W from Industrial Arts, and it's a celebratory imperial stout. Cut that noise out, Jimmy. And it is a traditional imperial stout, and it's delicious. Like chocolate, but they didn't put any in. Wizardry. And I'll drink it for the time being. So Ruth Ozeki wrote this book in 2013. I forget if it was long or shortlisted for the Booker.
But shortlisted.
I have heard of this book, and I wanted to read it at some point, but Nate, you picked it for us. Was it just because this was your just pick, right?
Yeah, one of the things we're doing this year is picking books we actually like.
7 years in.
To read. And instead of reading just, because a year, last year, 2023, we looked at the books we had read for the year, and it was like, we looked at the books we read for the year, and it's like, wow, these all suck so much. This was awful. Let's just do some books we like. So this is one of the books that I read that I liked, and I thought you guys would like. So I picked it.
Subarashi. The book is, you know, I gotta yell at you immediately, Jimmy, because the other day Jimmy was like, "Oh, it's a fast read." Fucking no, it's not.
Short, shorter.
It's 432 pages of modern metafiction. Fucking liar.
Well, first of all, like,
I'll start it Monday.
What is time? First of all,
I hate you so much.
It's all relativity.
So it has kind of two, well, it has one plot, I guess, but it's like a lot of back and forth between these two main characters. And the main narrator is a fictionalized version of the author, Ruth Ozeki.
That was confusing.
Ruth, who is an author.
Who lives in Canada. So it is really it is her.
Is she American in real life? Or is she Canadian in real life?
She is from the United States. And
her father was Japanese, but she grew up in America.
I think her mom's Japanese, but it
doesn't
matter.
So basically the narrator in this book, or the character.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Book. Okay.
Because her dad was a Mayan scholar.
A scholar of the Maya or a Mayan scholar?
Maybe both. No, his name was Floyd Lounsbury, which doesn't strike me as a Mayan name.
Probably not Mayan, no.
But yeah, so she is from the States, and I think she splits her time between Canada and the United States at this point. It's her as a character, a fictionalized version of her, I guess, living in this pretty remote, weird island of very curious and nosy people in Canada. And very quickly in the book, she finds some shit on the beach. And she's like, ooh, free shit. And it's a freezer bag with a lunchbox in it, the kind of thing any sane person would just ignore.
There's definitely a human foot in that.
Oh, yeah. Well, they talk about having someone had found a human foot recently.
Right? And it was delicious.
And inside is a journal and some letters. And they're written in Japanese and French. And fortunately, the author can read Japanese okay, but not great. So she starts reading it. And that gets these journal, and we don't know what the letters are right away, are the journal of this 16-year-old Japanese girl named
Naoko.
I forgot what it was short for. Naoko. And her husband is like, oh, that probably, you know, washed up from the tsunami that happened a year or two ago at this point, I guess. That all this shit from Japan got washed out to sea, and it's just like spinning in the gyre of the fucking Pacific Ocean, and it's getting spread out all over the coast. So whatever doesn't sink just ends up on coastline around the ring of fire there. You know, because the Pacific Ocean, much like our testicles, is filled with microplastics, and they are just
all of them, apparently.
Yeah, I mean,
everyone.
Yeah, this guy. I
told you it wasn't crabs, Mike.
Yeah. I knew it wasn't right to bleed out of when I ejaculated. It's the macroplastics.
That's not normal?
I don't think so.
Anyway.
So he's like, oh, yeah, cool. Let me know how that goes. And then he goes on to be he's like the character who should have been in the Overstory. He's like the biggest
tree lord
guy. He is a tree lord, yeah. And Ruth is kind of like not loving living in Canada in this, you know, remote wilderness of Canada. Becomes really fixated on the journal.
She is a writer in the story as well. She's been stalled on her latest book, which is, I think, about her mother that died of Alzheimer's.
The memoir, yeah.
And she hasn't written anything in a while.
Alzheimer's, it's a disease where you don't remember things that have happened. So it's like you lost time.
Anyway, it was subtle, Nate, but I think there were some things about time in the book.
There were quite a few illusions. So the book, which
illusions like time.
What?
Time is an illusion.
Time is an illusion.
Both of them.
The journal is inside the binding for In Search of Lost Time. That's an illusion. And it looks like a copy of In Search of Lost Time, but that's an illusion.
Yes, because it's actually just the binding. It's actually just blank, like, notebook pages, which this teenage girl has written in and, like, filled the entire thing. But the girl's name is Now.
And in case you don't get that, later on she has a blog that's like, the future is now.
That nobody reads, which is also just like the internet.
It's like a seven-layer bean burrito of time jokes.
Quite a few.
The layers are all beans.
Seven layers of flat circles.
I think that's a quesadilla.
It's like, Taco Bell would call it something else, I'm sure. It's the
Gordita Supreme.
Oh, I want that.
Okay, so Ruth starts reading this girl's diary, this girl's journal. And this basically makes this book almost an epistolary novel. And the way most of this book, like, unfolds is that Ruth is, like, reading the journal, and then she's like, oh, wow, that was crazy. And then, like, something happens to her, or she goes and finds out more about it, or gets the part translated. This is exactly the same way that both Colleen Hoover books we read unfold, where there's a piece of writing that they read, and it's like, oh, this is crazy, and takes all the way to the end to read the whole thing. Mm. That but this true. One is actually done well, unlike...
I was trying to remember. We read a book. We was like, why didn't this person just finish reading that in the one sitting?
In this, she makes the conscious decision, like, I'm going to read it, like, in real time, almost.
Well, she keeps stopping to go look up stuff from the book. And also, it's written in Japanese. And while she understands Japanese enough, it's like the Japanese of a... current or pretty recent teenager. So she's like, I don't know what the hell that word means. So you get the sense she's kind of like reading it haltingly and then talking to her husband about it because there's fucking, I mean, imagine how boring that is. There's nothing else going on that your wife is like, hey, want to hear more about my diary? It's like, no, thanks. How about the diary of the mysterious Japanese girl I found on the beach?
He's very busy doing his Friends of the Eocene art project, which is planting old trees.
New trees.
Trees from where? Where are they from? A different time?
Are you waiting for us to set it up and we're not?
Trees are now?
Why don't you branch out to another beer, Jimmy?
I could, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it gets to the thing. But in addition to being a writer, Ruth Ozeki is an actual Zen priest. And this book has got a lot of Zen shit in it, including Now's great-grandmother, who is a monk, the oldest people on Earth. She's really old.
Leave it alone. Get back to the trees.
This is a beer about, I guess it's about Buddhism. I don't know. It's called Death to Ego, right? You get it. Right?
I wanted to get a Budweiser. just keep calling it Buddhism throughout the book. But I thought of it too late.
There's no time like now. This is from Alewife, and it's a double IPA. Was it? Fuck yeah, double dry hopped IPA. And I go to Alewife maybe once every month or two because it's like right fucking here. And this is like their standard. I don't know if they're flagship, but it's the one they always have in addition to their vast rotating selection. But it's a good old standby. Not bad.
I feel like we definitely have had that on the podcast before.
Absolutely.
So Ruth starts reading this journal, and the girl who's writing it, whose name is Now, her story is crazy. So Now and her family, Naoko and her family, used to live in America, but this was in the 90s, because her father's a computer programmer. They lived in America, and they worked for her father worked for a tech company, but then he lost his job in the dot-com bubble, or so you think. And so they had to move back to Japan, and now they're poor. So this diary starts as she has to go. She's now living back in Japan, and her family is very poor. And she's going to school and getting horribly bullied.
It was like pretty intense.
The most insane bullying you've like ever seen or you've ever heard of. So first, at the beginning, they're just like pinching her and just like being like extremely annoying.
She has cigarette burns.
Yeah, giving her burns and stuff, but she has these scars in like more like the middle of the book, or more like in the second quarter of the book. At the form of bullying she experiences in school is everyone gives her the silent treatment. They like pretend that she's not there. They just completely pretend it.
Well, this is after her mother discovered all the burns and scars and talked to the principal, and they said, you better not bully her anymore. So the solution is, let's pretend she's invisible.
But then they hold a funeral for her in class, and the bitch teacher participates. the teacher who's clearly a loser, because they're kind of like reject kids, because Japanese education, we're led to
I did not understand the Japanese school system.
It sounds like a hyperbolic version of like the British school system, where you know there's like a couple of like hurdles that basically determine your whole future,
and you're relentlessly bullied the entire time.
I mean there's a lot of pressure on like conformity and academic achievement, and if you don't pass, you don't rank on a certain test, that's like, you're fucked. You get to be a bum now. Or you get like one more chance, but you have to go to 24-hour-a-day study sessions for the next year. And then maybe you'll know enough quadratic equations to go get a real job.
Isn't there just one?
One what? I mean, anyway, I don't know.
I don't know math good.
Me no know math. I tried to text somebody. I was texting somebody today about something completely unrelated, but I wanted to write, I'm no English teacher, but it autocorrected to, I'm not English teacher. Like, fuck, autocorrect.
It's self-aware.
We already knew that. It's like it tried to one-up my joke.
That's impossible.
Yeah, exactly. So the teacher who's teaching at the school is kind of also a loser because he's not teaching at a good school. And he's just, you know, the sad.
I think he's also a substitute.
He's a long-term sub.
He's not a dom. But he wants the kids to like him. So he participates in the bullying as well. Like, Jesus Christ.
They're only bullying her because she's a foreigner.
Even though she's ethnically Japanese, she just lives in America. So she, like, her Japanese isn't as good or isn't.
Well, she says she's too big.
So she's being bullied at school. Meanwhile, her father, back at home, her father tries to kill himself. He pretends that he gets it. So first, because he lost his job, and he's like full of, he has shame. And so, and then he feels shame. And then he pretends he gets a job. But in fact, he didn't get a job. He just puts on a suit and then goes out and sits in the park all day with his suit and his briefcase. He sometimes goes to like the horse track or the dog track.
He goes to OTB.
What's that?
That's where you bet on horse tracks remotely.
Oh yeah, there we go.
The saddest way to do it.
It's really the saddest place on earth. It's even sadder than the horse track.
So he bets on it and then doesn't do well. And then his wife is like, bring, show me your paycheck. Like, give me your paycheck so I can like buy groceries. And he refuses.
Which is the way, kind of like the traditional arrangement in Japanese households is like, you know, the man works, but then the wife manages the finances of the family. But he's trying to like, no, we're in America. The man does that. And that's what they were doing when they were in California. And so he's not giving that up. And so it allows him to give this, keep the ruse going a little bit longer before she could finally realize, like, there's no money. There's no job. There's nothing. Which in Japan, like, you know, there's a lot of pressure, social pressure, like, as in every place, to keep, like, appearances up. Like, in Japan has really low number, like, amounts of homeless people because, but it does have homeless people, obviously, but, like, entire kind of predatory businesses have sprung up where it's like, oh, you can rent this internet cafe booth that also has a shower. And so people are homeless and then they're like, I'm just going to go check my email. And then they take a shower and like change and sleep in a corner for a little while. And then they go back to work the next day to like hide the fact that they are homeless. And so then they're like officially not homeless.
Did you guys know that? I just saw this. Houses in Japan do not appreciate in value.
No, they just tear them down and build new ones.
Because of all the earthquakes? Yeah, they're just constantly changing the code. So every time a house gets like 20 years old, they just destroy it.
That's why Home Depot tried to expand to Japan some years ago, and it just fucking failed miserably. Because like, why would I fucking buy a single nail? This house is going to get thrown out.
Throw away the whole house.
It's fucking new house. Garbage. Get rid of the house. They're just held together by bukkake jelly.
Oh, jelly. Oh, God. Why? Why is it jelly? I don't think I'm ready for that jelly.
It's something else. It has preservative qualities, that jelly. No? All right, Nate's getting mad. Go, Nate, what else actually happens?
Okay, so her father, you know, comes, or instead of telling his family that he was actually just not working and just going and betting out at the park, he gets wasted on, what was it, what's the word for it? On sake you can get from the vending machine sake. There you go. Vending machine sake.
I love that band.
Throws himself in front of the train, but doesn't die because the train conductor like sees him soon enough. So like slams on his brakes so he doesn't actually get hurt. But then, so he's a failure at even killing himself. So he's even more of a failure, but he has to come home. He like sobers up a little bit and now he has to, oh, by the way, one of the themes of this book is suicide.
If it wasn't uplifting enough already.
There's quite a lot of suicide in this book. So anyway, so he has to now then tell his family that he wasn't actually working. He was lying to them and he was just betting on the horse track and stuff like that. And now, and then he becomes the shut-in people, what are they called?
Hikikomori?
I believe it's Hikikomoro.
Hikikomori.
Yeah, there you go. And then, what he does all day is he reads the, like, history of Western philosophy, like, book set. And then after he reads a section about a philosopher, he tears out pages and starts making incredibly elaborate origami out of it. And that's what he does with his time. Meanwhile, now Naoko is, like, you know, being bullied more and more and more. And then this is now, like, more than halfway through the book where she... after her like fake funeral, you know what? I'm just going to open my beer. So anyway, a lot of these people in this book,
fuck it,
they want to kill themselves, and some of them succeed. So this beer is called Tomb by Alewife. Another Alewife. There we go. This is a double mashed bourbon barrel aged imperial stout.
What's it called? Whom?
Tomb.
Oh, Tomb. Okay, that makes more sense. It's like whom. They're the direct object of their suicide.
Yeah, there you go. And, okay, and this is 16% alcohol, but it's very tiny can.
Oh, no, I've had that one. It's really good. But this one, they give it to you like in a champagne flute glass because it will fuck you up.
Yeah.
It's that really
looks
like good.
A fucking Starbucks can.
Like, tastes like raisins. I don't know what it is about these bourbon stouts. Whew, yeah, no, you get some bourbon and raisins. That is really what I'm tasting right now. Don't know why.
I mean, it's that weird sweetness that they get sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't taste like a pastry. It tastes like a raisin. You know,
it's quite strong.
It's very strong. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it's good.
That's a lot of it too. Good luck.
I don't think I'm gonna.
You're gonna finish it.
You better.
Not gonna waste that.
That sounds really good. I don't care if it's poured into your butthole. I'm drinking it all.
Don't do that. That would kill you.
Oh, won't.
Okay, so she
drink it all right now.
As if having the fake funeral in her class wasn't like the most bullying. No, it gets worse. She goes to the bathroom, and two of her classmates record her while she's like, they literally use their camera phones to like record her over the top of the stall, and then they like break in and then tie her up in one of the other boy characters. They like try to get him to rape her, but he doesn't.
They're trying to get him to leave her there. Start the raping,
right? So they can.
He could go first. It's really horrific.
There. And then they like take her panties and then auction them off on the internet.
That happens in vending machines in Japan. that's a real thing, but they're usually consensual panties. Also, great band.
and she is incredibly ashamed, and of course, and so she stops going to school. But then, and her father is like getting worse and worse and worse.
We've skipped everything with the great grandmother, by the way. We got it.
Oh, yeah, yes, exactly. So, isn't this the part where then she
goes? That's like three quarters earlier of the book. Than this? It's much earlier than grand.
It's like it's a summer vacation before then.
Yeah, but know from the beginning about this person, her great grandmother, who's a 104-year-old Buddhist monk. I guess
she is a feminist anarchist Zen monk.
I think that's the same. That's the genre of a Bikini Kill, is in.
It kind of is, yeah.
Her name is Jiko. It's the great-grandmother, right?
Naoko has a great-grandmother who's 104 and who's lived in this Buddhist monastery since 1945 when her son died in World War II, when you find out a lot about him as well. But she's, like, really funny. And she's like very helpful and wise, but she's also just kind of like lighthearted. There's at one point Naoko asks her like, oh, you know, how old do you have to be to feel like a real grown up? Because I just don't feel like a grown up. And then she replies, 105.
That's such a fucking Buddhist answer.
Well, she's trying, you know, as a monk, she's looking into, you know, trying to become enlightened and really discover the nature of reality. And, you know, reality is everything, including some things like fun. So would you say that she's interested in finding the nature of the fun?
Sounds very Buddhist, yes.
I did pretty good. I did pretty good this week.
The nature of the fun is suffering, I think, is one of the pointable truths.
Yeah. This is a botanical farmhouse ale aged in gin barrels from Three's Brewing.
I don't like any
Brewing.
Of those words.
I'm not going to like this. It doesn't sound like any kind of fun.
No, take a second sip. See if it tastes a little bit less like old lady perfume.
It tastes like gin. It's not terrible, but it is a botanical farmhouse ale aged in gin barrels once again. So, I mean, yeah, that's what this is. It's only like 4%, 4.6%.
That's a hell of a superlative.
4.4%.
It is the best farmhouse botanical gin barrel aged beer I've ever heard of.
Anyway, yeah, she's a monk. She's all about the nature of reality. And now's reality sucks right now. And always. Because all we ever have is right now. I think that's the point.
Right, that's what that Van Halen song is about.
Jump?
When? Now? Oh, now? Okay.
You know, right now, that the fucking shitty one, that was, it's a Sammy Hagar song.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, but you know, like, as now is narrating her diary, she talks about Jiko, the ancient lady, and you get to know her a little bit, but then she kind of goes through her life, and there's the summer where she meets her and spends it at the monastery. And they're in some remote prefecture in Japan, you know, one of the places where mostly everybody has moved away, and they're, you know, like the...
Not that far things. From Fukushima.
Yeah. Foreshadowing.
Can you foreshadow if time is an illusion?
Could at least three shadow it. You could all the way up to four. You picked it, Nate. You have to deal with this.
Okay, so she's living in the monastery.
Which is just her and two people.
Yeah. And there's, of course, because it's a Buddhist monastery, there are these little rituals for everything, including taking a dump.
The poo-poo prayer.
Can you imagine those three people? And every once in a while, I must have gotten to a point where, like, who just took that like, you get to the bathroom, and you, which one of you took this horrible shit and didn't flush it? And then it's just like they answer in Zen riddles.
What is the sound of one poop plopping?
What is the sound of one hand wiping? I don't know. Who uses two hands?
Sometimes you gotta.
You must let go of the desire for a room that doesn't
one time,
smell like
Mike,
this.
You gotta do this for me. One time when you leave the bathroom, when she asks what you did in there, just say, man, that was a real two-hander. And then refuse to elaborate.
I don't, my wife will not need elaboration.
Like, she'll really know.
Oh, Jesus.
She is already enlightened.
She'll be like, did you open the window? That's what she'll say. They tell me that there was a time when she was filming my daughter sleeping. She's like, look at our beautiful baby angel.
That's creepy as shit.
Like I said, like, she was like, you know, took a picture, trying to take a picture, but it was like alive, so it's kind of filming.
Hmm.
And then all of a sudden I opened the bathroom door and she just like turned with it, and it's just me, and I go, don't go in there.
A real snapshot of life.
It's a beautiful moment in time capture. And that was, it was during COVID when everyone was like, remote was like running to a meeting. I had to be there 30 seconds ago. Don't go in there. I just left.
It was really the fear in your voice that got her.
It's documented.
A plea.
If you have any respect for yourself. So they're at a monastery.
And her great-grandmother teaches her, like, oh, you have a superpower. It's the superpower to endure bad things. But that actually does give her some strength a little bit. And she likes it there and stuff like that. But then she does go back to school. And this is where they, like, film her in the bathroom.
But she finds stuff first. She finds out all about...
So she finds out
great
about
uncle, what the fuck is his name? Haruki.
Her great grandmother's son, who was 19 and was drafted into the Japanese army in World War II, and volunteered to become a kamikaze pilot after. So he was in university. This is Haruki number one.
Did he volunteer or was he volunteered?
So yeah, he was drafted.
Pick to be that.
So he was drafted. He had to go into the army. He had to go into the military, but he got to sort of like volunteer if he had to do anything in the military. He got to kind of volunteer to be a kamikaze pilot instead of like more or less dying in the trenches.
Serving on the lines.
And some like completely useless, you know, defense of some island, you know, or...
Yeah. Because this was the end of the war.
Yeah, so this was in 1944, where Japan is already losing. And so so 19-year-old Haruki number one, who was drafted into the army, keeps a diary, but he actually sends letters back to his mother in Japanese, but the letters in Japanese are exactly what you're supposed to say, which is, you know, I am giving my life for this, you know, great imperial army. But what he's writing, because he was in college and he learns French and German, he's keeping this diary in French. of which Ruth also back in Vancouver or back in, you know, the Pacific Northwest of Canada also has this French diary or these letters written in French, which she eventually gets translated partway through. And the way the book is written, it's like now Naoko is like, oh, and there are these letters from my written in French. They must be from Haruki number one. And then Ruth is like, oh, I brought the letters to the French Canadian guy on the island to translate. Because I just don't speak French.
He must have been insufferable just constantly pointing at the English language signs. I'm like, that is supposed to be in both. But when Naoko finds out about Haruki number one.
We call him Haruki number one because her dad is also named Haruki.
He's Haruki number two. He's the shitty one.
Yeah.
And it's like she gets directions to see a ghost.
There you go.
This is a beer that's been sitting in my fridge for 4 years.
It's practically a ghost by itself.
I know. I found it.
You moved with that beer?
I moved this beer.
Like on a Ouija board.
This is Directions to See a Ghost, a red wine and bourbon barrel fermented Baltic porter with Sangiovese grapes from Burlington, which I think I had one of these before, but I don't remember it. I'd move it again.
Through your bowels.
Oh, that'd be fine.
That's where it's going right now.
I'm going to have directions to see the most of my poop get into the bowl later. So this is pretty good. Good job, Burlington. This beer held up. I'm sure you're wondering about that. We should, by the way, say that these beers are brought to us by our supporters over at Patreon. And if you want to support the podcast, you go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub and get stuff. Or you could leave us a review, which you should do, but not a bad review. If you want to leave us a bad review, you probably already did that and aren't listening at this point.
But we haven't made it this far.
But we know more people, I know, more people listen to this podcast than have given us a rating on Spotify. What the fuck are you waiting for? 5 stars, please. It will cost you nothing. And it'll help us take down that damn Joe Rogan stealing our thunder.
Well on our way.
So, okay. So you find out about, you know, Haruki number one, and he's first like the conditions at the barracks of where the like hardcore, well, like the real military guys have now drafted all of these, you know, effete college students and just beat them mercilessly. Like that's how they conditioned them to be like warriors for the emperor. They just beat them. It's almost like they get bullied really hard, like Naoko. And then and by the way, Naoko has hinted, at least in the beginning of the book, that she's actually going to kill herself as well, just like the father.
She's hinted at it by saying, I'm going to kill myself.
Yes. She doesn't come out in
subtle hints.
She doesn't say that I can't remember. I felt like it was closer to the second. Oh, it was in the second half when she says she's just going to kill herself. But she hints at it at the beginning.
Yeah, after around the time they film her attempted rape.
Yeah. So, and he is keeping this diary in French so that no one else can read it. Because he knows that no one else there could read the French, or especially the, like, you know, boot camp sergeants or whatever they are, who are, like, beating the shit out of everybody every day. So he's like keeping in, he's really contemplating like, what does it mean now that he knows that his life is over and what is he going to do? And like, is he going to, you know, the duty to his country is to fly his airplane into the aircraft carrier and try and defend him.
They hadn't invented 9/11 yet, so he had to fly it into something else.
Well, that's going to happen later.
Wait,
wait, that's going to come up. But then, it doesn't happen. You don't find out right away, but later in the book, when the, you know, more at the final of his letters or of his diary is translated, he says that I've decided I'm just going to fly into the waves. I am not going to, like, I can't hate these Americans who are attacking us because they haven't done anything to me. And I've always thought this war was wrong anyway. So that's just what I'm going to do.
It's also hard for Jiko because she is, before, at this point, she's not a monk yet. She does become one after he does this. But she is like an actual anarchist, and her daughters are named after Emma Goldman and the Japanese woman who tried to blow up the emperor.
Yeah, I looked that person up because it was early in the book that gets mentioned. I was like, I don't know shit about Japan, like that on that granular level. And you look at them, like, there's like this 1906 portrait of this woman who was like a geisha. You're like, man, that's badass.
Yeah, she really hated the emperor.
And they hanged her at age, 29 or whatever for treason during the fuck was it called? Not the Showa era, whatever was before that.
I'm not Showa.
In Japan, they still have this thing of naming the time period of the emperor. So the Showa was from like 1926 to 1989 or whatever, however long Hirohito was the emperor. And I don't know, Showa is like another name for him. I don't know where it comes from. But it was before, and they mentioned it several times around the book. And they're like, oh, that was, Showa 18. Oh, 1945, you mean? Whatever it is. Like, they just know this. It's like a weird thing. Kind of the way time was kept in a lot of cultures historically. Just like,
it makes sense.
Like, if you ever read, what the fuck is that Barbara Tuchman book? The Distant Mirror? They're like, oh, it was year yeah. 7 of that guy being king. You know, that's good enough. It's not like I'm filing for Social Security. And what day was that?
It was 5 days before Michaelmas. Yeah. That's how they kept the date.
But yeah, so I looked it up. I was like, this lady was a badass. And that's one of the things that Ruth in the current story, she's trying to confirm these details. She's Googling the fuck out of these people.
She's trying to find out if this girl is a real girl. Like, did she find a real girl's journal floating in the fucking ocean? Did she die in Fukushima? Is it real at all? So she's like trying to find out any confirmation that any people were real. I mean, that historical figure, yes, that was real. But she's trying to figure out, is now real? Or she's looking up like the parents or something. She's just trying to find fucking anything.
But she finds eventually Jiko's name mentioned in a scholarly article. She finds JSTOR and has an article about her.
Because she was a writer.
And she had written a novel.
She wrote a novel that was a genre as a shisho setsu, and the more formal watakushi shosetsu, a Japanese genre of Japanese autobiographical fiction, commonly translated into the English as an I novel.
Watakushi is the hyper formal word for I. You would never say that today. It's like...
Is this like when we read a book that's reminded me a little bit of, by the end, Kafka on the Shore, when there's like that, formality level that only Bowser from Super Mario uses?
Watakushi is one of those words. It's like, nobody says that anymore.
There's like a book about a cat.
Only
that
used,
does it.
I Am a Cat by... What the fuck is his name?
It's that one because the cat uses it, and Bowser from Super Mario uses it in modern era. That's the only people who use it.
You would see it used by like the king in a fucking kabuki play. Like it's something. It has to be like old and formal. Watashi is the word for I usually. So Watakushi is like the thou word, or like that kind of equivalent. But Japanese is a language of hyper-specific registers of formality. And so, but that's largely a product of the 20th century. So early 20th century stuff is still much more formal. They like went through, I forget when it was, I want to say in the teens or the 20s, that they like simplified their writing system to make it somewhat more accessible to, they like got rid of it. They're like, fuck, we don't need that letter anymore. Imagine that. We just don't need Q.
We'll just use KW.
W. It's fine.
Yes, queen.
Why do we need C and K?
Can't spell cock without it, Nate.
So Naoko comes home from the from her summer at the monastery, and she knows all this stuff about her, her great uncle, the one who, was a kamikaze pilot. And as she gets home, the school year starts, and it's September. And it's September 2001, so 9/11 happens. And this section of the book, which is part 3, is just all about suicide. So 9/11 so her father had tried to kill himself before. He's about to do it again, so 9/11 is on television, so it's about the hijackers who killed themselves. And then there's a description of, watching the television coverage, and you can see people who jumped off the towers. And then other stuff happens. And then her father. Okay, so her father is very like upset about it. Watching the news, watching you know BBC and CNN and all these things.
He stops doing anything. He stops even leaving the house to go sit in the park or whatever. He's just watching the news, as every American did in September of 2001.
Yeah, and then he's very upset. And then Naoko has the thing where they like film her and take her panties and put them up for auction on the internet. And so Naoko stops going to school, and then she comes home and finds her father who has vomited all over the floor and is like unconscious. And clearly he had just taken a ton of sleeping pills. She calls the Japanese equivalent of 911 and they like come and like rescue him, or they come and you know like the ambulance comes and they bring him to the hospital and they also pick up the pills, and it's like clearly that's what happened, like clearly he did it on purpose, even though afterward he says I didn't realize how many I took, but of course he did. And everyone just kind of has to pretend he didn't, try and kill himself again, even though he had gone away. Oh yeah, Naoko goes to the monastery because he was going to go to some psychiatric institution to hopefully help him with his depression, but it didn't help him at all.
Well, you remember why he tried to kill himself time?
This because Naoko, after they take him to the hospital, and she is like cleaning the bathroom floor and just like putting all the like half digested pills into the toilet and flushing them, she looks on the computer and see that he tried to bid for her panties. He tried to save her. He tried to save her from embarrassment by he being the one that bought them so he could, you know, get rid of them. But he lost at the last second. He lost.
She had also shortly before really fucking laid into him and was like, you need to stop being a bitch, Dad. Because Haruki, number one, was a fucking badass dude who, you know, died for what he believed in or whatever. And you're just being a pussy. And the dad was like, oh, yeah, I am. Thanks. She's like, cool. Oh, it's 9/11. And then that was a thing.
Bad day
book.
To lay into your dad.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I should have waited for that one. But it went on anyway. So he was a man laid low to begin with. And then
he left his suicide note. Inside in the book of his history of philosophy book, inside the page about Socrates, about the death of Socrates, who also killed themselves.
Subtle. I like when people, you know, leave clue suicide notes like that. It's a tasteful touch.
Well, it gives your family a fun activity to do.
Yeah, and then you start thinking about other things. You're like, oh, let's see. Maybe he left something in the DVD of Old Yeller about being put down.
People love a scavenger hunt.
Yeah, it's nothing... helps grief more than a macabre scavenger hunt about your deceased loved one. By the way, do you know what the number for 911 is in Japanese?
119.
In Japan? It's 119.
Really?
It just seems like they're trying to be difficult.
It's like, no, we do last names first. We also do the ones first in 911. But it's 119.
Did they just copy America? But they were like, we can't do it the same way. We have to change it somehow.
The rationale is
like, you want to pick something that's hard to press accidentally. It's like the furthest numbers. I don't know.
That makes
easy
sense,
to remember, easiest to remember, and furthest from each other you can get, because it's harder than 337. Like, no one's gonna remember that shit.
It's the extremes. I don't know, but that's what they have there.
Hmm. So at this point, Naoko just like. Had stopped going to school. She shaves her head.
Which the monks
yes.
do.
And she does one thing where she goes back to school for one day. This is the day after both the end of the auction, which everybody in class was watching, and after her father killed himself, she shaves her head, and then she goes into school, and she's like, she's basically like, ha, yeah, fuck you, and then leaves. And it doesn't go back. And instead of going back to school, this is where she's sitting in the cafe, but it's like the French maid cafe, writing in her journal. But Babette, who is the like hostess, and I don't know because I don't know Japan, but I feel like hostess is just code for prostitute.
In this case, it's more like code for, yeah, or madam.
In this particular establishment.
Right. She talks about all the lady, the young women who are hostesses in her neighborhood, which is something electricity town. I forget, but it's in Tokyo.
That sounds like a place from Pokemon.
It does. Electricity town.
You have to fight Colonel Buzz or something like that.
I forget what it was called. But anyway, so Ruth back in Canada is reading this and telling her husband about what she read. And her husband is like, oh, that's so interesting. And Ruth is like, she's a pimp, you idiot. She's going to pimp out Naoko. And that's exactly what happens. Whereas Naoko like gets set up with some like, you know, rich business dude.
Creeper.
Yeah.
Is 16 legal in Japan?
I don't know what they never taught us that in Japanese class, what the age of consent was.
They don't lead with that.
Yeah, imagine that. Like, sensei. Like, hello, welcome to freshman Japanese. By the way, 18 months and you will be legal.
That's for people learning Thai.
And Thai there was like, you're old enough. That's lesson number one. Oh, no.
You ever see that SNL, Rosetta Stone commercial? When it's like, people are talking about the thing, like, Keenan's like, I'm learning Spanish. And then Maya Rudolph or someone, or Christian Wiig is like, I'm learning French. And then Bill Hader's like, I'm learning Thai for a thing.
That sounds about right. I don't know the age of consent in Japan.
But she's 16 still at this point.
Actually, it's her 16th birthday.
Oh, right. She made a lady on her 16th birthday.
Yeah.
I'm not going to Google it. I don't want to know.
And it's like,
yeah,
the guy, like, she is just really upset. Can't do anything. And so she puts on his suit and he puts on her schoolgirl uniform.
That's typical first date action.
And then they fuck. And he's like, yeah, and he was a really nice guy, but he didn't smoke cool cigarettes, but he gave me his lighter that had a diamond in it or something like that. This is what she cares about.
Well, she's a child.
Yeah.
And he's a hentai, which just means pervert, which made me reconsider all those searches I did years ago. Yeah, I'd heard of it too.
I hadn't seen it.
So I hear.
I don't know what it is.
I never looked it up. Never wanted to know.
Could have been anything. So there's a bunch of things that happened at the end. So like Ruth is like finishes the translation, but then she's like reading the journal. But then she's like, I know when I picked this up that there was writing on every page, but now the end is gone. It's all blank. I don't know what happened. And this is where the book gets like really weird. Where it strays into magical realism, because suddenly Ruth is also like imagining this as if it's happening now. Like this is a thing that's happening to Naoko right now. But then her husband is like, This was at least 10 years ago that she was writing this. She would be in her late 20s. We don't know what happened to her, but this would have been a long time ago because 9/11 just happened, and this is like 2012, 2013.
And also at this point, a bunch of pages in the diary have gone blank and are filling themselves back in.
Yeah, this is exactly, this is where it got weird. And and her husband is like, you have to like find them. Like you're a writer. You have to like find this story. It was something like that.
Yeah. She's like, no, I'm a writer. I've got writer's block. Like, no, you've got reader's block.
And then she has a dream. So Naoko gets a text message from the monastery that says, Chico is dying. Come now.
When?
Come now. No, you, and you should come at this time. Yes, exactly. And so she goes home. She has not actually seen her parents in a while. So she goes home, and her father is there. She is already, before this, found his little, like, suicide pen pal. And she sees, and she, like, walks in. She, you know, goes in the front door, and it's like, hi, Dad. And she sees that there's a bag by the front door, which is like charcoal briquettes, which earlier in the book was talked about how that's a way that Japanese people kill themselves. It's like in their car. No, I can't remember what it was.
I didn't really understand what that meant.
Yeah.
I thought it was like gassing. It was like a allusion to like gassing yourself in your car.
Maybe it creates carbon monoxide really or something like that.
It's like a metaphor. Are they, they're not fucking charcoal powered cars. So I don't really get it.
It's something like that. Anyway, and so she sees it and then she doesn't tell him, oh yeah, great grandma's dying. She's just like, I've got to go. She collects some stuff. And he says something like, some Japanese word that means, I'll see you later, or something like that. And she, like, can't respond because she knows what's going to happen. Meanwhile, Ruth...
He said, I'll see you later, alligator. And she did not respond with, in a while, crocodile. Like, I'm joking a little bit, but that's kind of what it is.
That
was kind of
the
thing.
Yeah, that would be the...
There's an expected response.
That would be the American equivalent, yeah.
But it's foreign. She's like... Another time then, K-men. And like, that's not even good. That's like a different, I mean, I get it, what you're doing there.
So then Ruth reads this part in the story, and then her husband is like, you have to find what happens because the pages are blank. So Ruth like sleeps and has a dream where she imagines finding Haruki number two on a park bench and says, your daughter needs you. Don't go. Don't do this. She needs you. And by the way, here's this thing. And here's the diary of your great uncle who was the kamikaze pilot and like gives it to him or something like that. And then next thing happens is there is more to read in the journal. And in the journal, Naoko is at the bus stop outside outside the monastery, and her father shows up. And he's like, we're going to go see her together. It's like, how did that happen? This is where this book becomes magical realism, where the 10 years later, the Ruth has a dream that talks to the father, but the father actually hears it and then goes to help Naoko. And then they go and they visit great-grandma, who does one, like she's definitely dying. And apparently there's a thing where Zen Buddhist monks like, write a poem on their deathbed, and then so they give her the paper and she draws, instead of doing a whole poem, she draws one character, and that character means live. And it was clearly a message to Naoko and Haruki number two.
She died before she could write Laugh Love.
Live from New York. It's Saturday night. What does it mean?
They'll never know. Or maybe it's just an ode to her favorite band, Live.
Lightning crashes.
And then Haruki number two and Naoko are like, oh yeah, okay, I guess we should. And you know, the newspapers are like, we don't know what she meant. Maybe she found enlightenment by showing that death is life and life is death and is no longer has to live in the duality. But Haruki and Naoko are like, no, we know what this means, and we're not talking. We're not telling them that.
Meanwhile, Ruth has gotten an email back from a professor she wrote to, trying to find the article about Jiko or something like that.
No, it's Haruki number two. Earlier in the book, Ruth had been searching on the internet for anything about Naoko or her father and stuff like that, and she finds an article about a man who used a pseudonym but clearly explains like why he wanted to kill himself and stuff like that. And it's like, this has to be the same person. So she writes to the professor who kept the thing and writes to, and she in the professor finally replies and says, "Oh yes, no, I believe it is that man. Yeah, I believe you are correct. And let me tell you about how I met him. He was working at a tech company in California. And then he came to me and said, I was developing human interface devices for video games. But then the company made a contract with a military contractor. And they were going to make this. They were going to start using this interface, this thing, which was for weapons. So that soldiers could use it to kill people. And that's when Haruki number two said, like kept saying, no, we can't do this. Like, and he went to the professor asking, can you teach conscience or can you teach conscience to a machine? Quite a relevant question in today's world. And anyway, that's why they talked, but Haruki number two kept pushing the leadership at the company. Like, can't you do this? We can't use this to kill people. And so that's why they fired him. It wasn't actually because it's just the dot-com bubble thing.
But it was for pets.com, which is the weirdest part.
It wasn't for Zappos?
Was that the shoe one? What the
Yeah.
So, even though this book came out in like 2012 or 2013, and this would have been, you know, it had this been real, it would have been taking place in the 90s about, you know, using interfaces with computers so that for the military, so that soldiers could kill people. Well, that's really happening now. Like, not only have Americans been using drones to drones that big, giant airplane size, you know, remotely piloted vehicles that can kill people. They've been using that for decades now, like definitely in the Iraq war quite a bit. But now in the war in Ukraine, Ukrainians are using like literally like the off the shelf drones you can get. And they're using those to drop grenades on the Russians. And so there are like drone pilots in Ukraine that are literally using these, like, you know, they have goggles where they can see outside of the front of the camera, and they're using those to kill people, to kill Russians.
Using them to make drone boats that sink ships.
Oh, yeah.
Like kamikaze drone boats.
Yeah, Ukraine has basically sunk Russia's entire Black Sea fleet using drone speedboats, which are piloted by a guy with goggles and an Xbox controller.
Normally, a dude with goggles and an Xbox controller is the worst guy to get stuck talking to at a party. But in this case, he's pretty cool.
So, Haruki number two, that's actually why he wanted to quit his job. Why he
was a badass. He also stood up for what he believed in, just in a less cool way. Like, come on. It's not. So then, do we get back to Ruth? I don't know what's happening. I don't know where we are.
It bounces back and forth because it's like kind of metaphysically connected at this point where she's contacted them. They have Jiko's funeral and then goes back to like do her thing. And then Ruth is also searching for her cat, which has run away.
Named Schrodinger.
Schrodinger's cat, yeah.
Schrodinger's cat, the cat.
You know, it's Frankenstein's the monster.
It's the band that opens for Portugal the Man, the cover band of Portugal the Man.
I guess it's Portugal the Band.
Yeah, there you go. So Ruth gets another email from the professor. This is one where he said, oh yeah, so my email got hacked years ago and I thought I had lost all these, but here's something that Haruki sent me 4 or 5 years ago. So this is still before the earthquake and the tsunami. It's because Ruth is wondering, like, how did this end up here in Canada on the beach? Like,
in a bag? Like, it was as if it were placed there.
Was it like? Did they die in the earthquake? Did they die in the tsunami? And is that how this got here? And so she gets another email from the guy. It's like, this is what I heard. Like, this is what he told me 4 or 5 years ago. I know, and he's like, I'm sorry, I haven't written in a long time, but I can tell you good news. I have now, like, my daughter Naoko decided to go back to school, and then she got a scholarship to study French in Montreal, and so now that's where she is. This was still years ago, but I invented a new internet, so he calls it a spider, actually, because this was like one of the terms from back then when this book was written. A spider that will eliminate your presence on the internet, eliminate embarrassing things on the internet if you don't want them there, which, by the way, that doesn't work. The internet is forever. Just ask Barbra Streisand.
Wasn't that like before the internet, the Barbra Streisand thing?
No, it was in the 2000s.
Was it? Okay. I thought it was back in the day when people were still buying maps of the stars' homes.
Okay, so back to the end of the book. Ruth gets the email that says, oh, yeah, my daughter is okay now, and I've invented this thing to eliminate embarrassing things from the internet. But she still doesn't know whether they died in the tsunami or not, or what, where the, how the diary ended up with her on Canada, and it's just not answered. The very end of the book is this weird thing about quantum mechanics, about how there are many possible worlds, just like that book Dark Matter that isn't actually about dark matter, and it kind of doesn't make sense. And
kinda?
Right, exactly, because it's like quantum mechanics. It doesn't make sense. So where Ruth's husband is like, yeah, you know, there are possibly like many worlds about stuff, and talks about the cat named Schrodinger and stuff like that, and we don't really know what happened. Or there are other worlds where Naoko is okay and Haruki is okay, and worlds where they're not, and then it just kind of ends there.
Just drop it, honey. They're fine somewhere.
So I didn't like that part, but it does say, but basically that final email from Haruki, which is still from before the tsunami, it says that, yeah, Naoko is, you know, in college in Canada, so she's okay, and then he's okay because he has a purpose in life and stuff like that. So that's kind of really the resolution, and the part after that, I didn't know what that was for, or I didn't really like it. But other than that, that's the end of the book. Okay, so what did you guys think of the book?
I fucking loved it. It was great. It helped that I, not that I'm some scholar of Japan, but like I did take Japanese in school, so I was like, oh yeah, I like Japanese shit. So that was fun. I liked there was like 150 or 200 footnotes explaining Japanese words, so I really enjoyed that. Though I could also see some people really not enjoying that. I'm like, oh my God, I don't care. Because sometimes you read the footnote, it's, you didn't need it, frankly, because you could get it from context. But I really liked that part of it. And while the book leaves some stuff kind of unanswered and just kind of random at the end, like, who knows?
So does life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was kind of the point. I mean, there's the unsubtle, if I have to find something to criticize, there's the unsubtlety of the time being phrase. Right? It's a tale for the time
being. Oh, yeah, we didn't even talk about that.
Yeah. But a time being is a person or a thing that exists in time. And then it's just constant throughout the book. And it's like, I see what you did there. And oh, what book did she use? Oh, In Search of Lost Time. And her name is now. It felt very much like, this is a person who has a degree in English wrote this book at points.
Also, She's a Zen priest.
Which I know fucking nothing about Zen Buddhism. So I'm sure I didn't really get a lot of that. Like there was a lot of stuff in there, and then excerpts from things that maybe she made up, maybe they're real. I didn't get any of that.
She didn't make anything up. For the 10-second primer of Zen Buddhism is, there was Hinduism, and then that guy became Buddha, and then we had Buddhism, and then Buddhism moved to China, and they had a thing called Chan Buddhism, and that moved to Japan. And Chan was a smushing together of Buddhism and Taoism. And that really caught on in Japan for whatever reason. And so it's Buddhism with some weird Taoist flavoring of, you know, getting away from all the, not uptightness of Buddhist practice, but, you know, ritual and, you know, the, what's the word? Orthodoxy. It's like, let's get away with, we're getting away from the point with all this other shit. So they strip it down, make it a little more, you get it? Which is really like the point is you just got to get it. And to get it, you just keep trying to get it. And that's what all the koans are for. It's for like, you're not supposed to be able to answer the riddles, you know, like the sound of one and clapping. They're not meant to be answered. They're meant to make you figure out, like, think a little differently. Think outside the box. Apple. But the guy she mentions in this book, Dogen, quite a few times, which he was like a big Zen teacher 800 years ago that kind of no one really thought about for 700 years. And then lately in the last century, people started like getting back into his shit. Like, oh, actually, this guy wrote some pretty interesting stuff. And he wrote this giant fucking tome called the Shobogenzo, which is like I don't know, like a hadith. I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, thoughts on Buddhism by this guy.
Exegesis probably is the right word.
Exegesis. I don't know how I felt about Jesus.
I hate you so much, you illiterate bastard. Exegesis is a critical explanation or interpretation of a scripture.
Yeah, kind of. I guess there's not really as much scripture in Buddhism in that sense, but it's like an interpretation of how we do things, you know. That was his scene. And, you know, Zen has always kind of done their own thing, their own way. And, it, you know, that the point of Zen is, one of the points of Buddhism is, all we have is now. Time doesn't exist in the sense of there's a before and an after. Those are like ideas. All we have is right now. And again, and again, and again.
And there's 65 over and over again. All we have is 65 actions in a second, right?
Yeah, 65. Yeah, that, I mean, that's a Dogen thing. He just, you know, pulled out of his ass. I don't know. They kind of make up numbers.
They had a very different position. But he when he said it, there some guys were like, nice.
So flexible.
Wow, 65. Wow. Someone's showing off.
But yeah, since she is a Zen priest, I assume she knows this shit pretty cold. And, you know, I like this book a lot. I didn't love it. I think it didn't have as much of the stuff that I thought it was going to that I liked, which is like, hey, look at this Zen anarchist lady. He's like, oh, this is in my fucking wheelhouse, baby. Holy shit. And then there was like none of that. I was like, oh, okay.
But do those things even go to, I mean, obviously anarchist, sure, in the sense of being like, I don't give a fuck about politics and government.
No, that's not what that kind of anarchist is. But like, she was a formal political anarchist of like, non-hierarchical everything, which was a thing in Japan, like that lady who tried to blow up.
But can those really coexist in a...
Sure. Why not?
Well, I don't know shit, but my sense of like Buddhism, and this is the dumb person sense of Buddhism, of course, is like, you're supposed to not give a shit, and you're supposed to focus on some other like higher realm of, you know, enlightenment, etc.
Well, that is true of some kinds of Buddhism, like in... what is the Catholic equivalent of Theravada Buddhism, which is more common in like Southeast Asia, like Indonesia, Thailand, all that shit. The monks, you know, they are the ones who meditate all day and they, you know, are supported by the people, and the people want to support the monks because they think, if I do this in my next life, because they are very, you know, really believe in the whole rebirth thing. Like, I'll come back as a monk and I'll be enlightened then.
It's kind of like indulgences. Like, you're kind of just paying for something later.
No, it's you're not paying for pardons. It's like you support them in the hope that, you know, it means, you know, good karma, for lack of a
is that more that robust different definition than a pardon? Is that,
well, you're not seeking forgiveness for anything. You're not seeking forgiveness or sins. It's just like part of your cycle is like you do better this time, and then you do better this time, and you do better this time, and eventually
so
you
paying for
become
a monk
in one life. Yeah, kind of. It's kind of a promotion.
So it's simony.
Yes.
It's not an indulgence. Simon? It's simony.
Simony is selling of offices of the church.
So you pay to be a bishop.
It's kind of like that, except you don't get it until next time around.
And it's a terrible... It's basically a pyramid scheme, because like you pay the equivalent of your first 2 years of salary, but then after 2 years they have to pay you, so you get a lot of money up front, but then it costs you more and more. It's
got to spend money.
It's a
money
Catholic
to make money.
Pyramid scheme.
I as a libertarian,
except for the fact that people died all the time.
I would say it's more like the tyrannical bullshit licensing the government makes us do for certain jobs. They make you pay for this license or credential, so then you can get the job.
I guess if you were buying a government position.
The spoils system, the thing we had until pretty fairly recently.
So the two aren't mutually exclusive. But also, she wasn't a monk until after she gave up everything.
It's kind of, and she's the type of, I don't know if it's all monks do this, but she has taken some sort of vow that she won't become enlightened until everyone else has also become enlightened. That's throughout the book.
Yeah, they're called, I don't know what they're called in Zen, but they're called bodhisattvas in usually in Hinduism and also in Buddhism, is like, I'm right on the edge, but I'm going to make sure everyone gets there before I go. Oh,
the edging and Buddhists.
They literally are edging. And like at the very end, before I die, I will achieve nirvana and go out with a bang.
I tell you, I made this joke like 18 times this episode, but the Edging Buddhists is the best band name I could imagine. Right? That's like the Violent Femmes and opening the Edging Buddhists. It's
the Traveling Wolverines.
So I don't know anything about Buddhism. I mean, I really know very little about Buddhism, but I do find myself increasingly attracted to it.
You know, it's like any religion. Is there are many, 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 many different versions of it, and we kind of lump them all together, and we think, the Dalai Lama is the king of Buddhism.
He's the Richard Gere.
But like Buddhism. He's the head of like Tibetan Buddhism, which is kind of like Mormonism of Buddhism. They threw a bunch of like magic stuff in there from Tibetan pagan beliefs. And Joseph Smith.
And cool sunglasses.
Yes. And apparently licking kids' tongues or something. I don't know.
Oh, well, then I'm in. But it's...
that's all I needed to hear, baby.
No, I find myself very interested in it lately, but overwhelmed and intimidated. It's like, I don't fucking know any of this. You know, like... It's not like I went to Catholic school, but I'm going to become Episcopalian. All right, that's a couple tweaks. But like, all right, and I'm going to become a fucking Buddhist. It's like a lot of choices just there, and that's a lot of recalibrating. But you know, this book just found me at the right time. Whoa!
Oh yeah,
God damn it! I give zero credit to Nate, by the way, but it could have been.
I just found it interesting. Hey. So I really liked the book for many reasons.
Second time around?
Yeah, I liked it just as much the second time, if not more. I think maybe more because when I read it before, it was before the podcast. Yeah, so we weren't reading so many fucking shitty books all the time. And so to finally read something good, it was like, oh, wow, this is nice. Okay, so one reason why I liked it is both like about suicide, which is like one of the darkest topics, but it is not that dark of a book except in certain places. It's actually like light and funny a lot of the time in an absurdist kind of way. Like, wow, this is so ridiculous. You know, her father failed even at killing himself. So he's a double failure. And it was nice. And also, with both this and like The Sympathizer, which like are two of the like literary fiction books that I picked, what's nice is it's not hard to know what's going on in the story. Like, that's pretty clear. No, but there's also this
until
also
the end.
The end was actually a lot harder, but except for that, which is only at the very end, you know what's happening in the story, unlike a bunch of those like classics we've read where it's like, what the fuck is even happening here? So annoying. So anyway, this was way so much better. And I found like just like Naoko being bullied, like first, like when they have the mock funeral for her, and it's like, oh my god. And then it gets worse after that. It was so crazy. And you know, it's like literary fiction, which feels formal, which feels like precious, but this book about what happens in the book is so not. The hentais and the like, you know, when auctioning her panties, and it's like, wow, it also kind of shows Japan, but a very like dark side of Japan, which is stuff that I didn't know about.
It's a weird place,
man. Yeah, it is a very definitely weird place.
Anyway, I thought the book was fascinating and really that was. And loved it.
I loved the now sections. I thought the Ruth sections could be a little, I don't want to say self-indulgent, but kind of like, I understand, they made sense at the end for like, oh, I got to get this part for the magic part. But I just didn't care as much about that.
Yeah.
And it was just like little weird little snippets of stuff. I was like, it was fine. It wasn't bad. It was just like,
Yeah, Ruth, it's mostly Ruth experiencing now's story. And now story being the more interesting part.
I'm like, yeah, I'm reading it too. I get it. I don't need how the narrator feels about the thing I'm also reading. I understand that it was a duality thing about now, and you know, I did not think that you needed to have any of the Zen stuff in there to get the point of the book, though. I thought that was kind of like, I don't know what it added. So to the end, maybe the end one is the most confusing part, was where it adds stuff, and it's like beyond me. It really got away from me at the end. I think my biggest issue was at the end, it was just like, I don't know, man. I lost the thread.
Yeah.
I liked it, but it was like the whole thing kind of really did remind me of Kafka on the Shore, where like it's weird, 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 and by the end you're like, oh, we're real weird now.
I wouldn't be surprised if Ozeki would say something like, the Zen parts are the most important part. You know, how literary author types are kind of contrary. You're like, oh, but that was the most important part of the whole book.
I know, I get what you mean, but also like that it is very likely, and that's honestly on me. Like I have, of the three of us, certainly I've read the most about Zen. Like I've read books about it, a bunch of them, just like nonfiction shit. And I get the basics part, but once it gets to like the really, like the trying to get it parts, it's like I'm lost. I like the way it sounds, but I don't understand what the fuck is going on. And that's kind of how this worked out. So it probably was that. That's not on her, that's on me. But it's hard for anyone to really get. And I think if they said they really got it, they're lying.
But that feels like what might have been the point. Like, I don't think Ruth Ozeki would be like, oh, this was a book about bullying in Japan. Or this was a book about being kind of bored and disillusioned about living in the woodlands of Canada. It's like, no, this is a book about time. And this is a book about what does that mean? And, you know, which is fucking pretentious and obnoxious. And she didn't say it, I said it. But like that kind, you know, it's that kind of a book.
I mean, it's pretentious and obnoxious in a literary sense, but it's the entire basis of the religion. So,
but it's that kind of a book where it's like, this is a book that's clearly about something. This book is trying to say something. It's not like she was like, what about a kooky story about a girl in her diary? Like, it's not, that's not what happened. This is a very intentional book. And I'm sure, as reading it, like you're like, ah, I see what you did there. I felt like I was saying that every couple of pages. Like, aha, very good. Clever. You know, that kind of thing happened throughout the book. But I have to say, when I get it, I really like that.
It's like, oh, I see what you did there. Yes.
When I don't get it, I'm like, smart. What a snob. When I do get it, I'm like, yeah, that's good stuff. It's fucking total bullshit. It's total, but I feel like most people are like that. When we're on the in, when we get it, when we know what's happening, we feel great and involved. And when we don't get it, we're like, what an elitist pig. But I didn't get the fucking Zen shit at all. But like anything about Japanese culture, like I know a good deal about that. Or the Japanese phrases, like I was like, oh, I didn't even need to read a clip, the footnote. I know what that sentence says. I'm so smart. It says I like tacos. But it was, I really, really enjoyed the book. Did I get the book? Fucking no. Hell no. But it was fun.
I don't know if it's irony, but it's, I don't know. Not real story, but the, you know, myth of the founding of Zen, or the origins of it, is one of Buddha's followers, because he had a whole bunch of them. You know, they all went on to do their own thing. He was, you know, sitting with all of them. They're all meditating, as they do, or, you know, hanging out, and he like picks a flower and he just holds it up. And one guy is like, smiles. It's like, cool. And that's Zen, is the idea of wordless transmission of knowledge. So the idea of writing books about it and having to talk it out, it defeats the purpose, but it's the only way to do it. So it's kind of a catch-22.
But isn't that how all the koans are structured? That they're fucking catch-22s and conundrums and whatever?
Well, yeah, because you're not supposed to be able to answer them. You're supposed to like switch your mind, be like, you're thinking wrong. the way you think is not the way you're supposed to think. Or those is not, if you continue to think, you know, traditionally, you're never going to get it. And until you learn to think differently,
Apple,
you're never going to get it. And I'm going to think differently, and maybe I'll get this book one day. But I did enjoy it. I have no problems with it. It was just like, yeah.
Listen, if
I wanted more, I wanted to bomb more emperors, really. That lady kicked ass.
She's badass. The woman who we keep referring to, I actually, is Kano Sugako, was the Kano Suga was also Sugako was like child. Okay, she was the anarchist geisha, and it's amazing. You see the pic, the one picture of her. She's got, you know, the kimono on and the hair and like a very stereotypical kind of weird bun bouffant thing they wore in Japan.
She looks like a lady who does not fuck around, though.
But she also doesn't look like a 25-year-old in that picture. It's one of those.
No, this was the 1911s. By the time you were 25, you were 50.
Yeah, that's true.
You've been working in the mines for 15 years. I kind of want to read her pamphlet called like "On the Reflections on the Way to the Gallows."
It's just 17 pages. Like, oh man, I chose poorly. This isn't how I expected it to go.
Should have used more lead.
So, I think if you're a book nerd, you should read this book. If you're a person who likes literary fiction,
it's definitely a book nerd.
This
book,
is this is.
I mean, it was on the Booker list, so it's got to be a book nerd book.
Book nerd. It's. I really liked it. And it, for me at least, it struck that balance of being like, oh, I feel a little intimidated and I don't know everything that's happening right now. And it doesn't feel that pretentious, which is a really hard thing to do.
You got to straddle that line fine.
It's really hard. It's all about balance and moderation, like Buddhism. But
duality. Yeah.
So I really liked it. And I want to read her other books. She doesn't have that many. I liked it. I'm a fan.
Good job, yeah. Nate.
You're welcome.
I didn't say thank you.
Well, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
And tell us what you're thinking for the time being. See what I did there? I don't even know what I'm supposed to say anymore. I was planning on that joke. I fucked it all up. Leave us a review.
Twitter/X.
Twitter. No one cares. No one's listening.
Go to all the social medias. That's where we are. And honestly, no one talks to us there.
Yeah, you look us. Just look up. If you don't know our @, just look us up, and you'll either find us or someone saying, "I found this podcast I hate. It's called the Drunk Guys Book."
Tag us in that.
They were so mean to Prince Harry.
Fuck his todger.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.
Did you guys know his middle name is Balzania?